Welcome to New Realities. My name is Alan Steinfeld, and each week on this program, I bring you the latest in what I feel are cutting-edge realities, how to change the world we live in and create greater, bigger visions of who we really are. Tonight's guest is someone who's very much in that realm of experience and work. His name is John Hinwood. He's written a book called Expect a Miracle, and he's going to talk about how we all can expect miracles. Hey, John, you there? John? Yes. Good. Are you hearing me pretty clearly?
I'm hearing you absolutely clearly, Ella.
Okay, good. So let's talk about miracles, because in your book, you cite many examples of miracles, but I think a little background about where it all began for you, that beautiful story you write about, how you just came upon this whole idea. Can you talk about that?
I'd love to, Alan. For me, my life has been a miracle. I have had so many things happen to me since my birth. In the 62 years I've had a pleasure of enjoying life on this planet. And back 21 years ago, a beautiful Chilean woman, D.C. Cordova, who lives in the U.S., was in Australia with Robert Kiyosaki, who has written quite a number of books around money that maybe many of your listeners would have read some of Robert's books.
Mm.
And I was doing a program with him in Melbourne, Australia, called Money and You.
Right.
And during the course of this four-day program, I was speaking with DC because my wife and I have three children, older children, who we adopted in 1985 from, we found them in orphanages in Chile.
Mm-hmm.
And DC's a Chilean woman, and we were saying about the miracle of having our children.
Yeah.
And she said, look, I'll give you a little card. And the little card she gave me said, expect a miracle. And I said, wow, what a beautiful card to receive. And I said, is this your idea? And she said, well, frankly, no. She said, I found these in the Unity Church in Honolulu quite a number of years ago, and they sold them in little packs of 25. Mm-hmm. And I bought a pack and handed them out to people and just kept buying these packs of cards. And since I moved back to California, and I just went and had them printed.
Well,
and she said, they've just been really something for me quite divine in handing them out to people, and people have seen all sorts of changes in their life just through receiving this little card. Hmm. I said, would you mind if I put this off and hand them out to patients, because I was a practicing chiropractor at that time. And she said, no, go for it. So that's the way it started.
Hmm. So let's talk about what a miracle is, because, you know, you say anything is the littlest thing could be a miracle that we need to appreciate. How do you define miracle?
For me, a miracle is something that happens to you that's out of the ordinary, it's unplanned, and it's a gift. And it could be a gift of somebody's attitude.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a gift of something material. It could be a gift of the spirit. Something that you've never planned for, but it happens, and you're the beneficiary of something that you feel better and the people around you feel better for.
Well, tell me some of the biggest miracles you've witnessed, the most miraculous, the most remarkable, let's say, of the miracles you've personally witnessed in your life, because I think you've been around a lot because you're looking for it.
Yeah, and it's interesting when you said when you're looking for them.
Yeah.
It's amazing what happens. If you're on the lookout for things, things find you. You become a magnet as well. Things just happen.
Yeah.
If I just go back in my own life, I can remember at age three, my parents took me to a leading orthopedic surgeon in Sydney in Australia where I was brought up, because I was extremely knock-kneed, and whenever I ran, I just fell over my own legs. And I remember the surgeon sitting there telling my parents that this boy by age five will be in a wheelchair.
Wow.
He's got this problem, it can't be a, and that's what's going to happen. But what we'll do is we'll prescribed these very built-up shoes that he has to wear. He can never go barefooted. And at night, he has to have these splints, these leg splints put on and be wrapped up in these leg splints every night. And, right. and that happened for a couple of years. And right. I can remember sitting there, and my father was the sporting editor of a major evening newspaper in Sydney, and sport was his life, and I could just see his face when this leading surgeon made the statement. And I thought at that time, this is a little fellow at three. No, that's not going to happen.
You made a decision that no way was that going to happen. You just decided that. You just said this is not going to happen.
Absolutely. And at that time, and I think back now, I obviously believed that a miracle happened. Something could happen, and that wasn't going to be the way. But I had to be part of it.
You had to make a choice.
I was. And, yeah.
You think if you just would have given up and said, oh, well, that's the way things are, your life would have been totally different, huh?
Absolutely. And over the years, I've seen it happen many, many times. And having been a patient chiropractor for 31 years, I've seen many, many people come to me who have been given death sentences, so to speak, by conventional medicine in many, many areas of their lives, and things have changed dramatically. My wife's also a chiropractor. In 1983, she was diagnosed with cervical cancer, and she and I both decided that we would use all the tests available from conventional allopathic medicine, but use everything in the natural realm for her to change her health status, which she did, and she's doing beautifully. You know, she's living a great life. Again, she decided that whatever had to be done was going to be done in herself to bring about that change of state.
So it's not, so when you say expect a miracle, we have to set our intentions on what we want to achieve in the world, right? I mean,
absolutely. Personally, I was exceptionally dyslexic when I was young, and I used to get into trouble always in the elementary school, getting the stick, the cane, because I was disruptive, and I was disruptive because I was didn't understand. So I'd ask other kids questions and things, and I was never allowed to go to a high school, and my folks were told that the best maybe I could be in my life would be a postal worker, and I was just sent to a school that you went there and, you know, when you left you could be a laborer or at the very best maybe participate in a trade or whatever. And again, I decided that that wasn't for me. I could do more. So I just pushed and pushed till I was the best in that school. I got out and could go to a regular high school, or I finished my last couple of years so I could go to university. Again, it's how much do you want something to happen? Because I believe we're the creators of miracles as well as things happening because we place ourselves in the right state and in the right place at the right time.
Right. Well, we place ourselves in the right... how do we know what the right state at the right place at the right time is? How do we know that?
I believe we all have a very, very high level of intuitive self.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to trust on that. The interesting thing is, you know, the quantum physicists now have shown us that, you know, we have three brains.
Yeah, talk about that.
And the gut, the enteric nervous system is the gut. And there are more neurons or nerve cells in the gut than there are in the spinal cord.
Right.
And what we now know is that the first place that anything is processed in our body is in our gut.
Mm.
And all of us know it feels right in our tummy. Some people say, I'm getting butterflies, I'm getting this sick feeling. It doesn't feel right, or it feels fantastic. And that's our intuition, where the gut is processing the information first of all, and giving is either the all clear or no way. And then when the gut's finished, we know now, this is all proven scientific fact, it's not somebody hypothesizing, that the messages go to the heart. And with every beat of the heart where it pulsates and sends blood out, it sends the messages out to all the cells of the body to come back with an answer, yes or no. And we know that the heart, the electrical field of the heart is 100 times stronger than the brain, but the magnetic field of the heart is 1,000 times stronger. So there's this massive energy force in the body that then sends messages back. If it gets the okay, let's run with it, or the not okay, let's stop, it then sends it onto the brain, and the brain brings about the action. So the body's magical in what it can do, I believe, and what I see all too often, people don't listen to their bodies.
Their educated mind
gets in play.
So we listen to our bodies, but then how does that create the miracle for us? You know, how does that...
I believe the miracle comes, the miracle is there often for us to recognize and act and go with it. Earl Nightingale, the great American speaker who's no longer with us, defines luck as when preparedness meets opportunity.
Let me take that in. When luck is when preparedness, well, that's good. I like that. That's really a clever statement.
Meets opportunity. Now, many, many people have great opportunities in their lives, but they're not prepared to take it. They live in the maybe it mightn't be right. Maybe, it could be a bit risky. Maybe what would other people think?
Yeah.
And when you look at people who miracles happen with, they're people who are prepared often to do something a little bit different. They're prepared to be open to receive and not say, nah, that can't happen to me. I'm not good enough to receive it.
So we turn it away. We don't embrace what's coming to us. And
absolutely. I'll have to share something with you that 3 years ago at this time, I was in Las Vegas. And I was at a conference. I was meeting a colleague of mine, Dr. Fabio Mancini, who's the president of the Parker College in Dallas and the president of the Parker Seminars. And he's a beautiful man, and he asked me to attend another meeting with him. And I said, yep, love to. And I stayed at the Las Vegas Hilton many times. I know the hotel very well. And I was to meet him at 2 o'clock in the lobby. I was there about 10 minutes to 2. And he got delayed. So I was just standing there waiting. And for those listeners who have been to Las Vegas Hilton, the lobby is huge.
Right.
And I was just standing there in front of the doors. And I thought, well, I'm not going to waste my time. I'm going to be a love magnet. I'm just going to stand here. I'm going to beam love to everybody who comes in the door. So I just stood there and started beaming love out to people. And instantly people started to come to me and even line up and ask me all sorts of things.
Really?
I know the hotel. So I was where to go.
What were you doing to beam love? You were just sending out the feeling of that love from the center of your chest?
Absolutely. It was just coming out from the heart. I was just beaming love to everybody who walked in the door, that I was a love magnet, and I was welcoming them to their stay at the Las Vegas Hilton. And
all right.
Some people went on their business. Other people tuned into it and came up and just started queuing up and asking me questions. So I was helping them. And if I couldn't answer the question, I'd send it to the concierge. Well, 10 minutes later, these two dudes in black suits and black ties and headsets came up, one either side. And said, "Dude, what do you think you're doing there?" Well, I said, "I'm a love magnet. I'm beaming out love." And I think they looked at me and think I was on some sort of juice, you know. And I said, "No, I'm just a normal man." I'm Dr. John Hill. I'm here from Australia. I'm waiting for a colleague to go to a meeting, and he's late, so I thought I'd just welcome people with love.
Uh-huh.
And I gave him one of my little cards. I always have plenty in my pocket. They said, expect a miracle. And I said, what's this? I said, well, I'm just giving people miracles here. I said, no one else is welcoming them. I'm doing that for you. Saving you a lot of money. Happy clientele.
And what did they say these days?
They looked at me as if I was a bit crazy, and then they watch people there. And they said, well, you're not harming anybody. I said, no. I said, that's what I do. I work businesses. I work with people in healthcare to help them have a better practice that cares for the human spirit in the best way, to heal the human spirit. And they said, well, carry on.
Imagine if we had a planet like that. I mean, I think it's possible. That's what I would love to create, a planet where we beam love to each other, and that sort of atmosphere circulates around the globe.
Alan, I go one more than you. You said you think. I'll go past that, and I'll say, I know we can.
You know we can do it, but how? How do we do it? I mean, where do we start with the, I guess, each person, right?
Yeah. Now, what did Margaret Mead say? That, you know, the world has changed not by massive numbers of people, but by small people small number of people banding together to bring about massive change.
Right. Never underestimate the power of a small group of individuals to change the world. Right. And you're absolutely right.
Absolutely.
If this movement is going to start, and it's already started with you and your wife and your colleagues, what can we do to facilitate that, to add to it?
I believe that like those little cards, I have hundreds of people a day going onto my website, which I started a year ago, to help promote the book when it came out, in September. And you can go on there and you can just print off Expect the Miracle cards. Mm. People who buy my book, the second, it's got two covers at the back. The second back cover has got three cards they can push out to get started. And it's amazing when you give people a card, they just look at it and they say, wow, can I have a miracle? I said, sure. If you want it, you go and seek it with your mind. It's amazing what comes to you.
So a miracle really is something out of the ordinary, really is something we don't expect, like you said. And I think to live in that constant wonder and astonishment, I was going to say is miraculous, but it's beyond that. It's just magical, I think.
And see, there are little miracles.
Yeah, like what?
There are big ones. There are humongous.
What's a little miracle?
I just returned this morning from Tokyo. I flew out on Sunday, and I had some meetings there with a Japanese publisher who wants to publish my book in Japanese. And then I spoke yesterday to a large group of reconnected healers who practice throughout Japan. And on Monday, I did a half day tour of Tokyo in the morning. And there's a massive Buddha shrine, the most beautiful shrine. And there's a street leading up to it that has all sorts of, it's more than a market. They're like little boutique shops either side of this long, long, long road. And I was looking, I didn't know what I was looking for, and I found this place that says beautiful T-shirts. And I've got grandsons who are 2.5 and 3.5. So I went, and there was this little lady who could have been my mother if my mother was still living, a beautiful woman in a mid to late 70s, little Japanese lady. We couldn't speak any language, but we just communicated together. And I pointed the shirt, showed her, and I saw a little boy walk by, and I pointed that that's the size I wanted. So she got a little hook and got it down and went running out and tapped the parent on the shoulder and asked could she measure the shirt up, and they said yes, and then I pointed to another little boy for my bigger grandson, and I said, oh, I'd like one for my wife. It's her birthday next week. So I found a lady, and she went over and started to hold the shirt against her, and the lady was Italian. And she was saying, no, look, I don't want any. I said, the lady, look, she doesn't want to sell you anything. She's just helping me because you're the size of my wife. Oh, wonderful, wonderful. So we had this most beautiful experience. And then she pointed out on the T-shirt was samurai in a Japanese character and number one, Ichiban. And I said, do this for my wife. She understood when I pointed to a ring on a finger, and then she showed me one, and she said, this, I love you. And I said, beautiful. So there was a beautiful little miracle. We had maybe two words that we could communicate in the same language. And so then I gave her Expect a Miracle card, and she looked, and another lady in the shop who spoke some English told her what it was, and she was all excited. And then I asked her, could we have a hug? And, of course, Japanese people aren't that particularly demonstrative with. She gave me a big hug, and they're all giggling, and it was a beautiful time. Now, to me, that's a miracle. That's a miracle of a love experience with somebody.
So you live in that state in a way, don't you, John? You exude a kind of love that other people aren't so in touch with, probably. Right?
Absolutely.
And so it's a really how you choose to live your life. You're living your life from that perspective, from that point of view of being an instrument of love.
Absolutely. And as I said, we adopted three children who were 7.5, 9, and 10.5 who were. Our sons were mute. They knew 100 words of colloquial Spanish. And in any environment, illiterate people, they say now at least 1,000 words.
Uh-huh.
And the Jesuits say if a child, by 7, they've learned everything they're going to learn, basically.
Right.
But I know that that's not correct. And I know that our kids had nothing, but they're beautiful adults in their early 30s now. Mm-hmm. And we thought the only way is just to love them and teach them the love principle of life.
Mm-hmm.
Teach them about how you care for other people.
So what's your vision?
Other people beautifully.
It's beautiful, and you're doing it sort of single-handedly, but what's your vision? What do you want for the planet, for yourself, for everyone to know?
I think if we give people the opportunity to understand that there's a positive outlook, a caring and a nurturing effect that individuals can give to each other, that when you do that, things change around you. People want to be supportive. They don't want to be negative to others.
Mm-hmm. Why is there so much negativity?
I know, for instance, you know, the drug industry is spending massive, massive amounts of money to attempt to prove the placebo is not correct, because we know now that 70% of healing of people, up to 70%, can be the placebo. The fact that the person believes that what the doctor has said or the therapist has said and is doing is going to enable them to get well. And this started back at Boston General Hospital back in the 50s. And now the University of Turin just did a very major experiment with dopamine only a couple of years ago, showing that they gave someone dopamine and then they just gave them, you know, salty water, saline solution, a little later on in the day, but told it was more dopamine, and the brain recorded that it was.
Mm-hmm.
So the body, it's not so much you trick the body, but by giving people an outcome that they believe is going to support them in getting well, 70% of that getting well process, as high as that can be, that positive expectancy.
Right.
And
so
there's
we have
been
to
so many things.
Yeah, we have to recondition our minds to think along much more positive ways of looking at life. We have to undo our negative conditioning is really what you're saying, I think, right?
Absolutely. Our negative conditioning drives so much. Yeah, I think of that story that probably many preachers have told of the fellow who arrives at the pearly gates and he's welcome and he's very cranky and cross, and he says to Peter, "Well, I want to see God as soon as possible because I am angry with him." And he said, "Well, why are you angry?" He said, "He told me he'd save me and he didn't. I died." And he said, "Well, God did everything in his power to save you. You didn't want to be saved." He said, "No, he didn't. He didn't come and get me." He said, "Well, yes, he did." He said, "When your house flooded and you're on the roof, they sent the emergency people in the boat, and you wouldn't get in the boat." He said, no, God's coming to save me."
Uh-huh.
"And then you're on the peak of the roof, just before the water's peaked, and the chopper came, and they sent the rescue down on the lifeline, and you wouldn't go with him up into the chopper, and you drowned. That God came twice for you, and each time you rejected him."
Uh-huh. But isn't that the problem with religion?
Yeah,
it's
how people see. Yeah.
So the problem with religion is that we're thinking God is coming in one form, and God, in a way, doesn't have a form. God is the love you were beaming out at the Hilton Hotel. That was God.
Absolutely. There was a great story that was posted. We have a reader's story of the week, and people post on the website miracle stories of whatever represents a miracle for them, and the readers vote, and there's a reader's choice story of the week. And now currently we're having a reader's choice story of the year because we were 1 year old at the end of last month.
Mm-hmm.
And on the 18th of this month, the announcement's made of the Reader's Choice Story of the Year, and that person plus a partner get around the world trip for two. Fantastic. And there was a student who heard me tell that story on the Gold Coast in Australia at a large seminar with hundreds and hundreds of people there in February. And in his story he said, I thought Dr. Henwood was just telling a story, that this wasn't true. He made it up for the event. So the night after that night, myself and three friends went to a very big nightclub in Surfers Paradise, like being in Miami. And we just got in the front door and we stood there and said, "Well, we're going to be people magnets." He couldn't quite say love magnets. That was a bit far to go.
Uh-huh.
But we could be people magnets and magnetize people coming to us. And he said, within moments, we all had queues of people in front of us asking us things. And he said we were stunned by it, but we just did what they said to do. And the management was so happy, they gave us free drinks and free food. And the management were wrapped. Everyone was all excited about what we were doing. Mm-hmm. And he said even one of the guys found his soulmate there.
Wow.
He said 2 months ago.
Maybe I should do that.
Absolutely, I recommend it.
Okay. I'm going to be a love magnet. I am. Because,
and it was amazing.
Yeah.
You know these young guys in their early 20s, all trying to prove something wrong, and it turns the other way.
Uh-huh.
So I know that they're going to be much better practitioners when they graduate in the next couple of years. They're starting their internship now. They're going to be far better interns because they're going to be caring for people in a totally different way.
Mm.
They're going to be seeing a different side to the human spirit.
Mm.
And now if we connect with it, we listen to people, we care for their needs, it's amazing how people can respond, how their bodies can heal.
Mm. That's so good. You're so right. I mean, what you're doing is seeding the consciousness for miracles, you know? It's like maybe if they become so commonplace, we no longer have to call them miracles. Do you think at some point we can go beyond it, or is miracles the kind of magical presence that we want to have with us all the time? I mean, expecting a miracle, but witnessing a miracle, it takes you by such surprise and awe and wonder when you see a miracle. Expecting a miracle, do you think we get tired of it? I mean, I know that's a little silly, but
it's not silly. I personally would never get tired of it, because there's always going to be the mundaneness of life. That is never going to leave us.
Isn't that a miracle too, though? Isn't the mundaneness a miracle? Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but without us doing the mundane activities, we don't have a life.
Yeah. Yeah.
Something else that's come up for me, it just happened when I talked about this yesterday when I was speaking in Tokyo, and it was that I rarely ever have dreams. They're rare events in my life.
Uh-huh.
And 3.5 years ago, I had a dream that we needed to move from where we lived. We lived on 10 acres on the top of a mountain, heavy bush around us, beautiful birds. It was just the most delightful place to live. And I had a dream, and I said to my wife the next morning, I had a dream last night that we need to move to the beach. And I know where it is, the place we haven't been to for years. Can we go down there and have a look? And she said, sure. We'd lived on top of this mountain, this lovely home, for 6 years. So we drove down a week later and had a look around. We thought, yeah, this is wonderful. So we looked for 6 months and finally found the house we wanted. And we purchased it right on the beach, a beautiful spot.
Uh-huh.
3 months later, our next-door neighbor from the mountain phoned and said, you know the people who own the property? You've got their phone number? I said, yes. Yeah, because they were renting the property, these people. And he said, because it's half burned down. And
wow.
He told me that chemically, so it's all gone. Being leveled.
Your whole house is burnt down? Burnt down?
The whole house. Just gone. Just disappeared. 15 minutes.
Well, you think you could have...
Yeah, that's the miracle to me, that I listened to the dream and we decided to go.
But what about the people who bought the house? But what about the people who bought the house?
Yeah,
they didn't... That wasn't fair.
No,
I mean,
unfortunately, they weren't there.
They weren't there.
They weren't home that night, which was fortunate. You know, it's only the property that was lost, not lives. But things happen, and I think often it's how aware are we of what we need to do? And and do we listen? Do we not listen?
Mm.
I was in a queue at LAX a number of years ago, and flying back to Australia, of course, the flights from LAX to Australia leave anywhere between 11:30 p.m. and 1:30 a.m. So
yeah.
That's the graveyard you leave LAX from.
Yeah.
And there was only a little Mexican takeaway place open. And when I bought my takeaway, for my wife and I gave the cashier an Expect a Miracle card. And these were Mexican folk who were very tired. That I don't know, they may have worked 12, 14, 16 hours that day. And there was a cashier and a server, and I could see a couple of people in the kitchen. And the lady who was the cashier became very, very excited. Oh, what's this miracle? What's this miracle, senor? Oh, this is beautiful. I said, yes, you can have a miracle. You can wish for what you want. Wishing, imagining, thinking about things, that's all free. And next thing, the server came over. And the server was all excited. So I gave the server a card. The next thing, the two cooks, chefs come out. So they've all got cards. They're all excited. And a gentleman behind me said, would you have a spare card for me? And I said, sure. So we started speaking. And this person had been a very major player in U.S. industry. And he'd retired. And someone he'd trained a number of years before had a major consulting business. And when he retired, he'd asked him, would he please come and do some part-time consulting work because he had this massive experience at a high level, which he said yes.
Mm.
And so we talked about that, and my wife and I spent half an hour with him and learned a great deal. And off we went, off he went. 2 days later, I received an email in Australia. And he said to me, you know, my wife had left me after 35 years of marriage 2 weeks ago. And I was heading home to commit suicide.
Mm.
I had it all planned.
Mm.
And when I saw the change of state of those poor people who had little opportunity in life other than to do menial work, but they saw what was possible, I realized what a life I still had ahead of me. I could find another beautiful woman to partner me. Mm. And I went home and I just disbanded what I was going to do. Mm. And I've now got a totally changed state about my future life. And thank you.
Wow, that's a beautiful story. That really, really is.
A miracle.
And it's more than a miracle.
All the person's thought was how well off he was, really.
Mm.
He'd gone through a traumatic event, emotional event, but to see these people who had virtually nothing be so excited.
Mm. That's beautiful. That's great.
You know,
Go ahead.
I was just laughing when I arrived in Tokyo. You know, when you come into the U.S. now as an alien, of course, since 9/11, they photograph you and fingerprint your right and left index fingers.
Uh-huh.
But they do them one at a time. In Japan, they've got a little machine where you put both index fingers in at the one time. Well, in an accident in South Africa in 1972, I had my left index finger amputated. And so when I come into the States, it always causes some problems because I don't have a left index finger to record.
Right.
And there's a very, very funny story in the book called The Fickle Finger of Fate.
Tell that.
Pardon?
Yeah, tell that story. Yes, definitely.
In the Bradley Building, I suppose many of your listeners may have been out of the U.S. and come back into the Bradley Building, LAX, and that takes, I think, about 5,000 people, just most massive arrival hall anywhere in the world.
Mm.
And there's a plethora of immigration officers lined up like a massive Walmart checkout. And an African-American gentleman who obviously did not want to be there that day stood up and proclaimed to the entire hall, which we were on the first jumbo to arrive, and there were jumbos arriving one after the other, and people were pouring in there, saying that if anybody makes a mistake on their form, I will send them to the back of the queue. Do you hear me? And, of course, everybody is listening and thinking, I don't want to be in his queue.
Right.
Well, my wife and I were in the gym queue. So he was about six people ahead of us. We get up there, and he points to me, and he says, you first. So I step up, and he said, put your left index finger on the pad.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I don't have one of those, sir. And, of course, that wasn't in the manual.
Uh-huh.
And that wasn't that long after 9/11. He'd never had anyone like this before, so he was pretty fried, as Richard Bandler would talk about, the neurolinguistic programming author.
Uh-huh.
And he was getting ready to stand up to throw me to the back of the queue, so I flung my left hand in his face with fingers parted and said, I'm a disabled person, sir.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, that fried his brains even further, and he didn't quite know where to go, being politically correct. So he said, well, give me any finger. So I stuck my middle finger up in the air and said, was it this one, sir? And hundreds of people started laughing because it attracted so much attention to him.
Uh-huh.
The worst thing was my wife kicked me so hard, I thought it was fractured. You know, she got a tender cue, so...
Mm-hmm.
He said, any finger, give me a finger. So I gave him that, and then we did the next hand, and I said, you know, sir, this is a tough job you got here. You get all sorts of people come through here. It must make you so upset and angry. And Look, I better give you my card. So I gave him the Expect a Miracle card. What's it? I said, sir, you need a miracle. I bet it's not in your manual about when the four-fingered man comes. No, it's not, sir. All right. So I just started to talk to him, and he calmed right down, and then he processed my wife, and then he called a porter for us to help us because I'm a disabled person.
Oh, no.
He totally turned around.
People just need to be understood. People need to... This is what Marshall Rosenberg's work in nonviolent communication is all about. People just need to be empathized with and heard and listened to, and then they can sort of drop back into themselves. You know, they're crying out for help, like this guy was crying out for help.
And something could be going on in that person's life, and unfortunately they don't leave it with their shoes when they walk in the door of their work environment. They bring it with them. And then people who they're interacting with get left some of that garbage that comes with them. And it's just a matter of working with them to change their state.
Mm-hmm.
Alan, so then in my book, I've got a section right at the back called 13 Tips for Miracle Making Magic.
Mm-hmm.
And I started off with number one is to think, talk and act positively in all circumstances, no matter what.
No matter what. That is a difficult
always
discipline.
Something positive is going to come for this. I don't know what it is right now,
mm-hmm.
but it's going to happen.
Yes, all the time. Even if it looks bad, it's always positive.
Yeah,
I mean, if you...
there's some good there somewhere.
Yeah. Okay, what's
the second one is... Ask yourself whenever you face a challenge, what would be the best outcome in this situation?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because there will always be a good outcome.
Yeah. Yeah. And hold that
number
vision.
Number three is fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And number three is find time to just sit and put your brain into freewheeling mode.
Mm-hmm.
Just let it run free.
Mm-hmm.
Because busy brains sometimes miss miracles.
Mm. They miss a miracle.
Often they miss them because the brain's so busy.
I mean, have you been in
often
a circumstance... Yeah. But have you been in a circumstance where you saw a miracle and someone standing right next to you didn't see it at all?
Yeah.
Like, give me an example of that, because...
Okay, I was at... I'd flown in from Australia to New York.
Uh-huh.
And I flew straight through. So that's about, like, 36 hours you're flying and changing flights and things.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I had to go to Teaneck, New Jersey. I had no idea where Teaneck, New Jersey was.
Right over the George Washington
Bridge.
So I
went down to Grand...
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, I had no idea, but I knew... I went to ground transportation.
Yeah.
I asked there, they connect me with some sort of transport. I went down and it's like 5 o'clock on a Wednesday afternoon and, you know, pretty much like the zoo down there.
Uh-huh.
And there are people yelling for these three beautiful women who are manning the ground transportation desk. Mm-hmm. And there are people, you know, been pretty obnoxious. And I got close to the counter and I took out an Expect a Miracle card and I just put my hand out with the card. And this lady said, "Whose car is that?" And I said, "It's my name." She said, "Expect a miracle. We could do with lots of those here today." And I said, "Yeah, ma'am, I can bet all these people." I said, "Well, here's this car. It's just for you." And she said, "Wow, thank you." And then the other two women saw it. "Man, have you got more of those cards?" I said, "Yeah, ma'am, just for you." So they all each had a card. And now, where do you want to go, sir? So I said, "Teaneck, New Jersey, please." So I said, "How do you get there?" And they said, "Well, you can take the bus." "Well, then you can take the taxi cab, you can take the shuttle, you can take the town car, you can take the limo or the super limo." Yeah, so she went through this great shopping list, which was great. I said, "Well, I don't have to be there till tomorrow to speak, so if I take the bus, I might get a bit of a tour and have a look around." She said, "Yeah, that's $77. I said, "Okay, done." So she's working the phones, and there are people yelling and things, and, you know, she's just having a good time. She's, oh, I got my miracle here, but this is good. And then she comes back and says to me, sir, I got you a deal. I got you a super limo for $77.
Wow.
Well, I said, man, that's a miracle. You bet it is. So
well,
I had this humongous super limo and me to Phoenix. It was lovely. But, you know, and there was other people who didn't even see it. They were so into just yelling out for what they wanted.
Yeah.
They didn't communicate.
Yeah.
They didn't even realize what was happening.
So part of it is
often
just,
people are so into the world.
So part of it is you've like retrained your whole consciousness to relate to the world differently. You really, really have, haven't you?
Absolutely.
And that's,
yeah.
Well, that's a miracle unto itself because, now everyone can do that. The world could be, I keep seeing this world being transformed by these little acts and they have been and they are. Could it reach
yeah,
a,
if I put on the list, you're not,
what's that?
I said, if I got a number four,
yeah.
It says miracles don't necessarily come with a clap of thunder or a flash of lightning. Sometimes they come on tippy toe. And you got to be aware of those little things.
Well, you know, Heraclitus said.
Number five is go with the flow. Sometimes at first sight, the miracles we get don't appear to be the ones we want.
That's true. That's really true.
You know, it often we've got to, you know, we have to step up the ladder. We can't go to the top of the ladder first up.
Right.
Number six, miracles come when you least expect them. Make them welcome whenever they arrive.
But when you least expect them. But wait, miracles come when you least expect them. I mean, just a little point, but you're saying expect them. You're telling people like
make them welcome when they arrive.
What's that?
Well, don't say, well, you know, I wanted something, but I didn't want it till next week. If it arrives this week, well, this is great.
I get it. Okay. Keep going. Yeah, I like these. Yeah.
Number seven. Help enough others get their miracles, and it's amazing what a positive life you create.
Yeah, I find that to be true. When I'm at the service of others, it's very rewarding and satisfying, and the universe gives back to me. I've just gotten that this week. There's been 3 or 4 phone calls and emails I've got where people have thanked me for doing just simple things that have helped change their lives. I mean, for me, it was just a pleasure to do it, to connect people, to introduce people to each other. And for them, it was a huge life-changing experience. And I was happy to do it. And I feel grateful for the acknowledgement, you know? I feel good that people have acknowledged.
It's amazing you say that, because I've hired an Australian publicist to help me. The Australian edition of the book comes out next week.
Mm-hmm.
And I hired a publicist who started 2 weeks ago, and he's the most beautiful man.
Mm-hmm.
And he said to me on Friday, he said, since I've been just in the basically 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks we've been working together, he said, I've just become so much more aware of things. And in the last 3 days, I've had a couple of people contact me who I haven't seen in a number of years with some fantastic leads for things that it's real miracle stuff. And he said, why is that happening? I said, because you know, the reason I chose to work with you is after I did my due diligence, everybody who I reference checked you with said what a beautiful person you were. That if you say you would do something, it's always done. It's done on time, with great reverence, with great care. So I said, you're the sort of person that I want to spend my time with. So if you're going to if you come on a reference check like that, you've obviously been doing that for so many people, and it will just come back. It's like a boomerang. The Aboriginals throw that boomerang, and back it comes. I said, if you throw your boomerang out there and you help enough people unconditionally, it's amazing what comes back to support you when you totally just don't expect it. It just appears. But you've got to be ready to receive. And she said, look, thank you. He said, this stuff I've never even realized. And he said, I see what you mean. And you'll just explain the same thing to me, Alan. You do it out of love. You do it out of caring. You do it because you want to help somebody else get up another rung in the ladder.
Yeah, I do it because... I do it because somehow I see there's a connection between... For me, it's almost, it's fun. It's fun to connect the dots. And so I see a dot there, I see a dot there, I see a match, and I put these two things together, or two people, and... You know, I've done my job, and whatever happens from there, it's up to those people. But I feel like I've done the work of the universe. I've become the glue, in a sense. And that's a gift unto itself, just having seen that and connected that. That's satisfying for me. Do you know what I'm saying? So I help miracles.
Exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that leads into number 8, which says, you know, look for miracles around you, a bird on the wing, the beauty of a rose, the smile of a child. And when you see the miracles that already exist, new ones just start arriving. And number 9 is it's okay to ask. Miracles are for everyone, and we all deserve them. The greatest thing when I give people a card, they say, can I have a miracle? I say, absolutely. Ask for one. And usually most people have never, ever asked for a miracle. They've thought, well, they're not for them.
Well, can you tell us how do you ask for a miracle? What would you say if people are listening? How would they ask for a miracle? What's the word for that?
If there's something that they need to have happen in their life, yeah, ask the universe, ask the Great Spirit, please support me, please help me in my quest, in my movement forward to bring this into my life. But also you have to be prepared to do some work.
Right.
You have to be prepared to do some, and also you can't expect to receive if you haven't first given. It doesn't matter what it is in life, the cycle is always giving and then receiving, not receiving and then giving.
Well, I feel we've been...
That material thing.
Well, I feel we've been given so much just being here. It's such a gift. It's a miracle just to be on the planet. So everything else...
Abundance abounds. There are plenty of miracles for all of us. There's not a shortage of things. And they're talking about recessionary times, hard times. Heck, I've been in the US recently. I just come back from Japan. I look, the planes are full, airports are full, stores are full. I don't know what they're talking about. There's plenty of money and there's plenty of
people. Well, they're talking about generating fear. And for some reason that it's not going to happen. We're not going to let that get to us. People like you are making a difference. You know, we're almost out of time, John. This has just really flown by. I'm talking to John Hinward. But give us some information and tell us when you might be in the States and how to find you.
Okay. The last one, just I want to close with.
Oh yeah, please.
When you're totally open to when you're totally open to receiving miracles, it's astounding how they find their way to you, and you become a miracle magnet. As soon as you're open, things find their way to you. Now, what I'd love your listeners to do, because everyone has had at least one miracle happen in their lives, I'd love them to go to my website, www.expect.com. a-miracle.net.
Yes.
And go to the website and please post your miracle stories. And
yeah.
Put a photograph of yourself up there, because people love to read. There's phenomenal stories up there for people to read. Beautiful stuff. And
yeah,
it's free to become a member of the website.
It's a great website.
Free if you... Thank you, Alan. Thank you.
And
it just become greater. You know, I've been up there for a year now on that website's been up, just a year and a week. And if you type in Expect a Miracle Cards into Google, we're 1, 2, and 6 out of about 400,000. And if you type in Expect a Miracle Stories, we're 1, 2, and 7 out of 5.5 million.
So when are you going to be in the States?
I'm going to be speaking a week Friday at the Venetian in Las Vegas at the World Anti-Aging Conference.
Uh-huh.
I'm doing 2 presentations there. And there's a woman who I met in September while I was speaking in L.A. who's building right now a network TV channel called Expect a Miracle. And Melinda and I are going to be filming people at the Venetian and interviewing people about miracle stories for that channel when it comes online in the middle of next year. And then I'll be back at the Las Vegas Hilton speaking at the Parker Seminar with my wife this time in the middle of January. And my schedule for the rest of the year is still being finalized at the moment.
Well,
I'll have confirmed next week. I may be doing a 5-city tour on the 3rd week of January, which would be L.A., San Francisco, Phoenix, Las Vegas, and New York. But
well, you definitely call me if you're coming to New York. Thank you, John. I've been talking to John Hinwood all the ways in Australia. His book called Expect a Miracle, his website expect-a-miracle.net. What's that?
And if they want the book on Amazon, if they go to Amazon, You Can't Expect a Miracle by John Hinwood, they can buy the book on Amazon.com.
Great, great. John, you are doing an amazing job for the planet. That's John Hinwood, H-I-N, Wood. Yes. John?
Thank you for having me, Alan. I've loved it.
Yeah, sorry about the delay in the... but we'll next time we'll do a show when you're in the States, and we'll go deeper into this miracle consciousness. Thanks again. This is Alan Steinfeld for New Realities. Check my website, newrealities.com. Next week, at the same time on BBS Radio, we'll be looking at more states of new realities. Email me at newrealities.net, newrealities@earthlink.net. And thank you for listening. And we'll see you next time. We'll look forward to hearing from you. Here's a song called The Song of the Soul.
Thanks, Ella.